This is Philosophy versus Improv, where two sages try to teach each other a thing or two, and maybe you, the audience, get something out of it as well.
It's Philosophy versus Improv. This is Mark Linsenmeyer coming to you with a little philosophy to share.
Just a little bit, a little taste.
A smidge.
Just a digestible aperitif.
And my co-host is...
Mary Hines with the improv, clearly.
Well, well. Here you sorted out your roommate issue. You have a...
Finally.
So no more...
And she's... Hopefully no more. Yeah. At this point, I feel like the last couple months have just been repeatedly pummeling me. So I never know. I don't know what to expect at this moment in my life, but I certainly hope that all goes well and I remain cautiously optimistic.
All right, all right. And some of our intervening discussion had to do with your kind of putting into practice what we talked about in some previous discussions, which are, you know, you don't get convinced of something in a one-on-one debate. In fact, those are unpleasant often. But of course, being curious, being open to what random people have to say about random things. Just reading books, basically.
Reading books.
Lets you on your own.
I would say that's not even necessarily random people. Because when I hear random, I think like, oh, hey, did you know that when you do this, this happens to you? Can we trust Gary? I don't know. But yeah. I hear what you're saying. I'm just being snarky.
To follow up on part of what we were talking about one of the previous times.
Yeah.
I continued spending time on x.com on my phone, but I've concluded that every post is in fact just trolling. Like that the algorithm is set up so that people get paid based on how much engagement they get from other people with the check marks, which I am not gonna pay him money and be a check mark ever.
Nope.
And so just putting something like, do you think that Obama should be arrested right now? Like, well, that's going to get some engagement, but that doesn't mean that anybody actually thinks that.
I mean, I'm sure there are people that do think that, but it's
people
incendiary.
Responding. Yes, is the point.
And it's probably a robot. It's probably like a wall of different smartphones that are all just being operated by some people sitting at computers.
So that is not actually, that's not random then, because it is incentivized to be perverse voices.
Incentivized incendiary. Those are fun words to say together. Incentivized incendiary.
Yes. And I think one of the things that I have learned from reading a lot of philosophy is what I don't have to bother to read. So we get these pitches very consistently. I get these pitches for people that want to come on, actually, the Partially Examined Life, which there's no chance we would have them on to talk about their various books. And we
no
had
chance.
On,
get out of here with your trash. It's toilet paper.
So we feature. I shift them to this podcast, and like, well, if you can stomach the, if you're intrigued by the improv angle of it, then maybe we can talk about your book. But you know, have both with you and Bill have had some mixed results with that kind of thing, and in particular, we had talked about astrology together a little before, that was something that you had some interest in. I dismiss outright without any sort of, but I did find it, you know, fascinating as a 7-year-old, you know, I'm a Leo. Yeah. What's you know, so there was something to get into, and I assumed that your way of approaching it was harmless anyway.
To address your assumption, you have ascertained accurate data from how I communicate as a humanoid life form in 2026. I find it to be interesting. I find all formats of storytelling to be interesting. I do not think it is gospel, but I have noticed enough synchronistic moments that it is something I have interest in. ... To be continued in our conversation. Yeah, go ahead.
Yes. So we were sent this thing on behalf of a Carlos Orsi. What Science Says About Astrology. Hey, do we want to have Carlos on the podcast? Do we want to have him talk about this book? And I shared it with you, and people might be interested in that. And
yeah,
the philosophy category includes a lot of things. And we can get into, you know, that there are the idea that there's some sort of synchronicity. I mean, it's just like arguing about the existence of God. I mean, it's a It's a variation of the flavor of that. But this particular one, because this guy is a science writer saying astrology is bullshit. Here's something about the history of it, but it's bullshit.
I love how you paraphrase, but the whole book is that. It's like, this is bullshit. Here's why.
Yes, it's not only bullshit, but here's why you might think that, you know, get false positives, why you might think it's not bullshit, but you're wrong. And here, it's not a harmless thing to just believe because, and he gives, there's a chapter, which I did not read much of this book. Let me put it that way. I spent about 10 minutes total with this book, but I sort of,
like 45.
Well, that was, yeah. So that was the idea is, since you were the one that had the interest in this,
I win, gold star.
I would leave this with you and see if instead of this, having this guy on probably arguing something against you that you don't, you know, you don't actually believe, right? Right. He was arguing just like we had the atheist, not, you know, it's not like one of us is a great defender of traditional theism or something such that we could like really recreate the kind of stuff that he was talking about. So we more just talked about what was in the book. And very similarly, you know, I'm not a religious person. I think that that book was I'm glad somebody is writing it, but like, I don't want to bother to write it and probably don't even want to bother to read it. This one, I definitely felt that way about, but yeah, you tell me now, what is your, did it change your life?
Well, before we get into that, I am curious as to the evidence that revealed itself in your life that led you to the conclusion of, nope, not for me. Think it's bullshit.
Good question. Cause yeah, do these things actually rely on evidence?
Causation is everything, right? Like, so what caused you to be like, mm-mm?
I think it's just a matter of not understanding how it could be true, right? That I just think it's common sense that, yeah, okay, so the position of the moon makes the tides go up and down, and the tides going up and down can have some effect on physiological things. Like, I buy that much, but as to where Saturn was on this particular date, and yeah, just the idea of everybody that was born in a certain period has personality characteristics in common. I just find that obviously false, and it's not been supported by experience.
My follow-up question to you is, how do you feel about magical thinking? Do you find yourself engaging with like magical, whimsical thoughts? As I pet my forehead with a crow feather.
Well, because so it's good. the related thing that I was thinking about is stuff like, God doesn't give you anything more than you can handle. Or, you know, when God closes a window, he opens a door. This kind of thing. And I do find, you know, like you can't always get what you want. Yeah. But when you try sometime, you might find you get what you need.
You get what you need. Yeah, I know.
Yeah. So as far as a narrative thing for interpreting, you know, if I really, put myself a lot of my energy into this romantic relationship and it doesn't work out and I feel terrible. One of the things that I would console myself with and that I would find to be true is that something else would come around. I am who I am. If one person didn't like me in that way at that time of her life, somebody else will. And sure enough, it worked out fine. So
yeah.
Is that magical thinking? It seems like it's both magical, but also it's faith in the sense of, maybe we talked about this, that what people would argue like, oh, it's okay to have faith in God because you have to have, we always have faith. We have faith that the sun will rise tomorrow. You have faith that your friends like you.
I feel like what you, and thank you for going with me on this curiosity train. I feel like it does come down to faith. And it makes sense to me that astrology would not resonate with you. Also with the scientific evidence of that you are not a religious or really a spiritual. Do you consider yourself spiritual or are you just like, I'm good? It makes sense to me is my point. So my question then led of like, oh, well then what is your engagement with that like magical, like faith-based ideology?
The question, are you spiritual, should be a simple one, but I break it down into particular behaviors, and I feel it's entirely okay to, you know, if you're on the plane that's crashing, to pray in that moment, and it doesn't actually involve any religious commitment. There's no stakes to things going in your head. So some kinds of magical thinking, insofar as they're just like creative thinking, like, of course, that's great. you know, what would life be if you were just like, I will only think what is. I will not right. think about what could be.
Any possibility or, yeah.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Or things outside of your ability to explain them.
Well, what, yeah, what, feel like we should talk about miracles. Do you feel like there are some things that like are reported as miracles that you're just like, you know, what? I don't know. That the honest thing to say is, I don't know. Mm-hmm. If you think you're so arrogant about the laws of nature.
I think that's a good thing to say. Like, I don't know. Like, good for you. Good for me. That doesn't work for me. This works for me. You have fun out there, Bob. Don't poke anyone in the eye.
I brought in this. I got a piece of toast. And it has the face of Jesus on it. Mary, Mary. Mary, look at my toast. It's the face of Jesus. Do you see it? Yeah, that's the nose right there. That's the... Okay,
honey,
he's sort of like a Picasso Jesus, but like, you know.
Honey, you sneezed on your toast when you already had a mouthful of egg you were chewing on. That ain't Jesus. That's food shrapnel.
No, but the food shrapnel just showed what the toast was already presenting. It was concealed.
So Jesus made your, Jesus had the time to make your half-chewed eggs and a little bit of toast. Mash it up and show up like Dumbledore does in the Harry Potter on the cards.
Well, don't talk about that demon stuff. I'm talking about Jesus.
Sorry, I don't mean
you know,
to bring
the
evil Rawling Dementor herself into this.
She's
for our house, and it's
she's coming a long way. She's giving herself to good causes now.
We don't need to invoke the name of that devil woman. Mm-mm. So what you're saying is Jesus had enough time to manifest himself on your sourdough.
I mean, Jesus is all powerful, so wouldn't you think
that is true
that he could have make as much time?
Omnipotent and omniscient as well.
I mean, you said that we only met because of divine intervention. If that bus that I met you on had been a little bit earlier or later,
and I normally don't take the 66 bus that time of day, and you were there, you know, it was raining and you didn't have a raincoat and you were just a drippy little rat, but you just were such a cute drippy little rat. So I had some backup paper towels in my bag and I gave them to you to dry yourself off.
Right. And if you hadn't had that recurrent problem with slipping on them banana peels and feeling like you had to have paper towels with you to wash yourself off, then you wouldn't
it's
have
a
had
trauma response.
You wouldn't have had those response. Paper towels, and then we wouldn't have had that bonding experience. It's like, how is our meeting, which is a miracle, and our little Kevin, who's a miracle, and
a miracle child.
Yes. Why not my toast as well?
Well, this is one of the things I find the most attractive about you when you make these arguments. You just get this. Look at that smile on your face. You know what? Who am I to deny Jesus a jaunt onto your sourdough? Who am I?
Actually, so looking at it again, it looks a little more like Charles Manson.
Well, God damn it.
Maybe just eat this shit up. Let's just...
and see.
All right.
That was fun, Mark.
Yes, I feel a little bad for characterizing Southern people, but I'm sorry. It was just a split.
Listen,
second.
Okay, here's my turn to come in with an improvisation lesson. I taught about 5 workshops over the last week, and I'm so tired and I'm so grateful because the momentum is momentuming, and the momentum is momentous. I love language so much and I consider myself blessed verbally. So sometimes I like to give up and say what I know isn't really a word, but it's like the word that makes sense. Anyway,
I mean, it's just the momenclature of the moment.
The momenclature. Yeah. Oh, that's nice. Oh, we're back in the kitchen again. Okay. So anyway, my point is I made some discoveries as I was teaching and I'm always learning as I'm teaching. And I think the rule for like accents or like making fun of something or making a caricature out of is the accent the butt of the joke? And if the accent is the butt of the joke, then that's, you're approaching racist territory. But if the accent is just, is a vehicle that serves the character's point of view and the world that they live in, and we're not like making that, the accent, the joke, then thing, thumbs up, you're in pretty good territory. Where comedy is already really borderline anyway.
I mean, I could talk about something that might, because I'm saying this, it probably won't lead to a scene, but I, over the weekend, I went to my first Tai Chi class ever.
Oh, I took Tai Chi in college. My only 8 a.m.
I had, I mean, I've done martial arts. When I was a young person, I did Shotokan for a number of years, but then
what's Shotokan? That sounds
karate,
like some kind
Shotokan
of
karate.
Oh, I was thinking Comic-Con. My brain immediately went, sorry, keep going.
But this was part of my Y membership. So I've been using the machines there and nice. Trying to lose some weight and et cetera. But these classes are just thrown in. So I showed up to this Tai Chi class and this little old, I think he said he was 88 or something. This little old man with a very thick accent, very hard to understand and very quiet. And was showing us the sequence of moves and was giving us some of the philosophy and was saying stuff like, you know, you want to breathe slowly here because the slower you breathe, the slower any animal breathes, the longer it lives. A dog breathes very fast per minute, doesn't live very long. Human. And like, this is not real science.
Okay.
But
yeah, but good,
you know,
for him. I mean, yeah.
So if I were, you know, to try to embody that character, I would have to try to do his accent. Which,
give it a try.
No.
If you want to. No, you're too
stupid. Not at this moment.
But does that make sense of what I said? I feel like that really clicked with me and that resonated when I heard that. And then seeing evidence of how I've played in the past and where has been dangerous. And so as long as you're not making fun of, I'm assuming he was of some Asian descent?
Yes, yes. You know, I think the thing is, if
as long
you can
as you're
do
not
the accent,
making fun of Malaysia, right? You're not like making fun of Malaysian people. You're just doing the accent because the accent is very helpful to communicate the comedy of what this human said and how the temper, the tempo, the pitch, the volume that they communicated it in.
I think if you can do the accent well, that it's probably okay.
Why does it need to be a good accent? Oh, because if it's bad, it reads as
right.
Like,
so when I was just picturing myself starting it and then picturing myself, well then would I say, oh, asshole. Like, no, he didn't say asshole. That's like a complete, me Chinese, me
that's
play joke
saying.
Sort of thing.
Yeah.
That, you know.
But it's your why behind it. Like, what's the fire that's fueling it?
Mm-hmm.
See what I'm saying?
Sure, sure.
But also, this is another thing that I've been did a lot of coaching in this last week because I've been really focusing on a lot of character work because everybody wants it. Everybody wants it. So I'm here to give the people what they want. That the process is the product. And there's something really beautiful about that vulnerability and authenticity and like fuck it, fail forwardedness of it. That like as audiences, we enjoy being a part of that intimate evolution. Like you don't wait till it's done to share it. You do it along the way with someone.
I've always wondered, I've had people with foreign accents on podcasts. And then like, well, if they're doing it, can I do it with them? So I'll do it for a second. I have a British guy on Pretty Much Pop. And very occasionally I'll try to talk British back at him, but it's not a serious, it's not a sustained.
Maybe the best way to handle that is to ask him, like, are you okay if I play, if I do this and put that filter on my voice? As long as you're not like, oh yeah, get a spot of tea and then pop in and watch the telly because it's always raining outside and then pop over to Tesco and get a couple biscuits. Like, that was not okay. I don't think that was okay. That was me just being racist.
You're right. That is very much like the, oh, asshole. I see you have
a stereotype.
A stereotype. But, you know, we know that it's okay to do some stereotypes for us white people in this era.
They were like, yeah, I can do this, but don't you dare do that. You're a bad person if you do that one.
Well, even that. even the less intelligent person voices is iffy.
Who are you talking to?
The inspiration of Blair's cousin on Facts of Life, who is a breakthrough, you know, let's have a person with a...
I haven't seen that. I don't know.
You're slightly too
young.
I
know Facts of Life, but thankfully I'm a little too young to understand.
I'm trying to remember which type of disorder she had, but it was, you know, one of your standard... So there was a lot of making
in
fun
your
of
standard
this.
Assortment. In your standard assortment.
Yes, it was. You know, on the one hand, it was groundbreaking having an actress who had this condition be able to like be a real character on the show, and not everything to do with was about her condition. But on the other hand, you know, young kids watching this, you're gonna do the voice in. I'm not trying to be cruel to the person, and I wouldn't do it in front of them, but.
What's the condition that she has and is representing?
Cerebral palsy. That's it.
We can only base our truths and how we see the world, and as I like to call our operating system of you as a person, based off of the information and the evidence that we receive. So if that is their only touch point for someone with cerebral palsy, then naturally, to our mammalian state of mimicry and wanting to like fit in, we will parrot whatever we've received, which syncs us back up into astrology. Like, you know, it just keeps feeding the machine. So we just assume that it is true. And we're just like, oh, what's your sign? Like, we just keep perpetuating it.
All right. So we got to keep feeding this machine more things from, you know, here at Ozarkic tech company. We've gotten complaints that the voices, you know, Siri, they're too uniform. We need to represent more kinds of groups. So we need to have the computer, for instance, talk like somebody who has cerebral palsy. And, you know, that's why we called you in here as a voice actress to, because we know that you are just a master of all sorts of voices, and wanted to see if you'd be comfortable, Miss Doolittle. Doing this.
Before we have any further discussion, I'm going to need to see the contract, and I'd also like to know why the specifications of my rider haven't been met, and I see no matcha lavender latte in the room, whether hot or iced.
You know, actually, the voice you're doing now, that really sounds like somebody with something wrong with them, so I think that's perfect. You don't have to imitate anything. Just be you. But yeah, let me get the contract.
I find your flattery to be controversial because on one hand you are insulting me and on the other praising. Do you see the conundrum? And still no latte.
I mean, that's the kind of thing that I want the computers to be able to say, to make them more human, that you ask them a question. Can you do some research for me into, you know, botany? And they say, there's no latte here. I cannot do that. That'll make, you know, it much more realistic.
I see why you're not recording the voices, because that was absolute gobbledygook.
I mean, I did the prototype. I mean, do you want to ask it a question? Oh. I have it set up here.
Sure, I'd love to ask it a question.
Yep.
What does a bitch have to do for a latte?
Latte forthcoming. Bitch has latte.
Oh, finally some results around here.
Yeah, so that voice, I don't think was very accurate to a human being. I sort of just...
Hold on. I need another... auditory sample.
Okay. Ask it anything.
What is the name of the robot again, Charles? That was not my question. That was the question before the question.
Robot in Charles is in charge.
Charles in charge is your name?
Charles in charge is robot.
Interesting.
I think he's trying to tell you something about TV history. I don't think he's saying something self-identifying.
Marvelously confused, and this entire morning meeting has been utterly...
Charles in Charge is part of Small Wonder Universe. All characters in all sitcoms are robots.
We got to work out some things. He tends to think that everybody is kind of like him.
My sign says that all creatures on screens are mechanical.
Yeah, that's not right.
I am expected to lend my mystical vernacular abilities onto this shoddy example of a robotic Encyclopedia Britannica.
Encyclopedia Britannica, part of book universe, not compatible with TV universe, different universes.
I believe that your settings for legality are set a little bit too high.
I try to explain to him that books are often made into other media, and he just...
Books and TV, things appearing on screen, fundamentally different. No book. Hegel Phenomenology, not part of Small Wonder Universe.
Yeah, okay.
Oh, my goodness. Well, best of luck on your venture.
Okay, so you're not... All right.
Absolutely not interested.
All right, well, thanks.
Takes Latte walks out. I love it. I just felt like I had to double down on... I was just having a lot of fun with this character, honestly. Yes. Great job, Mark, going back and forth between the robot and Charles. Well done. Well, it's not easy.
I don't know that any of us was named Charles. I did not understand what you were asking is the first question. So
in scenes, it tends to ground them and make them feel more real once a name has been given to your scene
partner. The robot. Okay.
So, I think I was trying to name... I named you Charles because I realized I hadn't given you a name yet, and I still didn't have a name. So that was me giving the gift
you.
Of like a...
You were Miss Doolittle.
That's correct. You did. My bad. Yeah. That happened in
it's
like
hard
the
to
first
remember.
Like 10... That happened in like the first like 10 seconds or like 5 to 10 seconds. Yeah. But it's okay because there's no mistakes, right? We work with it. We play with it, which ultimately led me to my character's point of view of this is absolute nonsense.
One of the lessons that I retained from Bill's tenure on the show was how do you keep the scene going and not just resolve it, especially when, as about half of our scenes were, one of the characters is just being annoying and the other one should just sensibly walk away. Or in this case, you're asking me for the contracts and the like, that's not going to make an interesting scene if I actually get the contract. So are there things that I can say that will forestall?
Pause for a second. How do you know that me asking for the contracts won't make it interesting?
In an audio only format, at least the it would shift focus to the content of the contracts. And so that was a question. Do I want the scene to be about the content of the contracts?
I feel like what gets to happen is more surrender and trust to the present moment and not worrying about a scene that hasn't even happened yet.
Sure.
So in improv, we're blindly going through the forest, breadcrumb after breadcrumb after breadcrumb. So when a breadcrumb is skipped over or denied, it hurts the chain. So say if, you know, for example, I ask about the contract, you show me the contract, who knows how long we'll stay there before the next breadcrumb shows up. And who's to say that whatever happens won't be interesting?
No, you're right. Of course we could make the contract interesting.
I hear what you're saying as well.
But you're right. I should have picked up on that as a crumb.
But I think my argument is for the faith of not knowing and for letting yourself feel comfortable in the discomfort of not being in control, which I think is, again, to link us back to astrology, one of the reasons why I enjoy astrology is it helps me make sense of nonsense, and it like gives me a little bit of respite in all of the wildness of the world. It gives me a mooring, you know, like a little anchor point down to try to make sense of nonsense and chaos and see yourself in it. I found something really interesting in the reading discussing confirmation bias. So you can just be given like a personality test that's like blank, like platitude statements, and we will seek confirmation bias and finding ourselves in that. And that when it is sold from like astrologers or whomever with such conviction and confidence, we as the consumers are craving a solution and rationale. So we are eager to fall into the astrological flattery and to be sold on it.
Yes, I saw some of the negatives in the book did seem to focus on people taking advantage of each other, using this as a tool, that this was actually used.
Which I think
used,
is marvelously icky for anything.
Used by the Nazis. I didn't read enough to see how exactly they used it, but just another tool for mind control by powers that be.
So are you referring to the example of the serial killer?
Tell us about this example.
When they were doing a test on astrological profiles, they used the profile of a very heinous and prolific serial killer who promised victims of Nazi behavior that he would like help them and free them and all. And he ended up like killing them and dissolving their bodies in acid. So they took that profile and gave it to a group, and then a lot of the results, so many people like agreed with it, and like anyway, so they're just trying to flip that, like, your astrological prediction is false, right? That there's no, it doesn't like make you someone.
Well, now I'm interested. I know the first part of the book, which I did not look at all, is about the history of it.
It's very fascinating. It's just very dense and kind of aggressive.
Yeah, it seems like it's very well scientifically grounded.
It's grounded, but it's also, it's maybe I just don't read enough material like this, but it just felt really, and I think because I was facing my own astrological bias, so I was feeling emotions coming up as I was facing my own bias. So facing my bias, as I'm reading, this is what's happening. Mm-hmm. Facing my bias, taking notes, feeling angry, assessing, why am I feeling angry? Oh, just keep reading, just keep learning. And as I'm reading through, then coming to the transformational point myself, I'd be like, yeah, it probably is bullshit, but it's nice, shiny bullshit. And sometimes I like it. So anyway, it was very enriching and also intense for me. And I'm definitely curious to read more.
Well, that seems like we got what we wanted to get out of it.
Yeah.
So I'm not confident if having the author on would have, unless you had those same notes to say, hey, let's talk about this particular passage and this particular example. I don't know. There are other, because the example you just gave seems like not one. If you say that there are things tangentially related to this practice that are very objectionable, then the response is, well, don't engage in those things that are tangentially related to it, right? If all religion, let's just say instead of astrology, if religion caused wars, well, don't have the sort of attitude toward religion that would make you cause wars. If religion makes people blow themselves up and suicide bomb, or, you know, then don't have that attitude toward religion.
For example, when I met Max, my now honey, I found out he was a Scorpio. And my knee-jerk response was, I can't date him. I have had a terrible experience with Scorpios. Mm. And then I did some work in looking at that and observing the men that I have dated that are Scorpios. What about it? And then I was able to like scale back and deflate the power of that thought, and to be able to talk about it with him and like face the astrology bias and allow him to show me who he is through his behavior, not based off of the stars under which he was born. But imagine me early on in our relationship saying, I can't date you because you're a Scorpio, and then pushing him out of my life. So that's kind of, you know, that practical example of like, maybe don't make like massive decisions based off of astrology.
Man, because this'll I'm pretty defensive of love, that I don't even like. I remember the first time I heard about, oh, if you're Jewish, you can't date people who are not Jewish. And I was, as a non-Jew who had been attracted to plenty of Jewish people, I found that
I was
appalling.
Raised in that too. But now I'm dating a Jewish man. Yeah. And my parents are still kind of like, they're happy for me, but I can always hear some kind of like doubt in their voice about it. But they're also happy for me because I was raised with that too. And then I'm.
What about his parents?
I have an inclination that it's similar.
Uh-huh.
But that's an assumption. But I also am looking at evidence of, like, both his mother and my mother seem very adjacent in their qualities that make them challenging people. So, but I always joke with Max and be like, I'm a good Gentile. Like, I'm a curious good Gentile.
Right. To me, you know, because I don't take religion particularly seriously, like, that is no more rational than I won't date Scorpios. But of course, I, you know, have had conversations with enough Jewish people about this to know that it is not at all the same thing, that the historical, ancestral, you know, our people are dying out. And so you can date somebody who's Gentile, but then they should convert. We got to keep the, you know, we don't want everything to fizzle out. That if you actually cared enough about your religion, like, that would be a legitimate thing. But, you know, I don't buy it as far as, you know, certainly not racially. Like, that's just offensive to even consider.
All of this is so fascinating to me, just looking back at it from this, like, macro perspective, that nothing matters, but we are the ones that make things important.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, so differences in values, and those could be... Yeah, I dated somebody in college who was... Well, she was very Greek, which is very similar to being Jewish in, like, you should find a nice Greek boy... At least, yeah, you know, for adjacent, certain.
Okay, I see what you're saying.
And the same thing.
That,
you know, there are liberals of both types.
I gotcha.
Who wouldn't care who their kids date or whatever. But I think it was more that I was a artsy hippie, probably not going to get a great job, kind of where she, her cultural stance was much more, you know, you should become a dentist and make a lot of money and support me.
So they used the Gentile as, like, escape, not like they use the Gentile as, like, an excuse.
I had never actually met her parents. We didn't get that far, but, like, she could foresee that I would not pass the muster.
Pass the test.
And so, you know, her
be an acceptable... values.
Yeah. So it was just a clash in values. And in that sense, if you're saying I'm Jewish, I don't want to marry somebody who's not Jewish, like, because we have special values and you're not going to be able to understand, like, well, maybe. I mean, I guess, you know, teach me. But although you could figure, oh, it's not my responsibility to teach you. But, you know, if you want to spend your life with somebody, like, maybe it's worth the effort to bring them into your circle, whatever that means. I would like the person I date to, like the same bands that I do. But, you know, I don't care that much. And I'm certainly willing to put the time in to give. It didn't work with my wife. We have very different musical tastes. But all this was about astrology. Yes. So are these things comparable?
All this was about astrology.
Are these things comparable to, right? Because that's not something that you, it's not like Scorpios give birth to Scorpios, etc. Unless they really time it carefully.
Exactly. Yeah.
Which I'll say, in planning our kids, my wife and I, we really did not want to have kids born around Christmas.
Mm-hmm.
That's it just valid. Seems a bummer.
Yeah.
So, and also, I think we were conscious of, do you want your kid born, like, right in September, October, you know, that cutoff? So either they'll be the oldest kid in class
or
the youngest
cutoff,
kid in class. So we just had him right in the spring. It just seemed kind of how it worked out. I'm sure funny. That's not.
Makes sense. It's very practical.
Yeah, I don't remember. I mean, I probably would not. I'm sure it was more my wife emphasizing these things than me, because I would not have had that kind of foresight. Like, you want kids? Well, let's get some kids. You know, what are we waiting for?
Let's get to the factory and make a baby.
So was any of that irrelevant to, because I'm finding things that are okay. There's a little bit of a point to it, but I guess I don't see any point in, you know, even having a prima facie expectation of, like, this relationship is not going to work out because we're both Leos, which actually is the case of me and my wife. And I can put it in terms of that, like, oh, that's why we're butting heads all the time, because we're both control freak Leos.
I can honestly say I don't know, because now my foundational thought on astrology is more fluid. So I don't know.
All right. Well, then.
I don't know. I feel like I can't confidently say that anymore, because I don't know. I mean, I feel like we all write our own stories and buy into our own realities. So like we become how we want to be seen, right? We're telling our own stories and playing our own characters.
Well, why don't you start us on something to conclude our meeting together here, inspired to express what you can't even put into words, what this experience talking today and reading the book and whatever.
Hey, Pluto. Buddy, I heard the news, Pluto, and I'm
What's sorry. That? What's that, Neptune? What's the news?
Yeah, nobody told you?
No, I know.
Oh, shit.
Were we supposed to, like, be lined up or something? Is that,
No, it's not scheduled. No harmonic convergence? To the next moon cycle. No, there's okay. no convergence. Oh, okay. You didn't miss anything, my guy.
I mean, we're way out here. It's hard to get the news from the,
yeah,
from the
no,
center
it's
there.
Yeah, you're looking pretty good, man. You losing some weight?
I mean,
you lost some weight.
It's really losing the planetary status. I feel like I'm freed up.
Oh, so someone did tell you. Oh, thank God. I did not want to be the asshole who had to tell you the news.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I'm cool with it.
So you heard about it.
Yeah. I don't, it has no real practical difference. Like when people make the dioramas, maybe I won't be on there. I think they're still going to want to put me on there anyway. I mean, I got such a good name.
You're taking it so well, dude. I was really worried about you. And you know what? I got to tell you, no matter what status you have, the only status that matters is that you're my friend.
Oh, I really appreciate that. I mean, having a big sister like you looking after a little guy like me, I mean, with all your fancy moons and your rings and all that, I'm just a rock. I'm just out here.
But you're more than just a rock, you know, and you might not be a planet. What do they make you? What does that make you now? I can't remember. I can't read.
A planetelle, I believe.
A planetelle?
Something like that.
That's pretty cool. That's pretty cool, my guy. I'm just so happy that you're taking the news so well because, I don't know, I was really worried about you.
Is there something that we should be doing to influence the human behavior? Like, you have much more sway gravitationally.
Nah, well, honestly, at this point, we are so far away from the planet that's got all the hairless monkeys on it.
Right.
That we can't really do much. We're too far away. I know the moon thinks she's some kind of big bad bitch, but honestly, it's gravity. You didn't hear it from me. You didn't hear it from me. You didn't hear it from me.
Even though I don't mind my change in status, I just wonder if the change in status was caused by, like, that fancy pants Jupiter there, you know.
Oh, it's possible. That jolly asshole.
Moving a little to the left.
Hey, guys. Hey, everybody.
Oh,
You haven't, you hanging out without me?
Yeah, why are you out this far? This is unusual.
Hey, you know, I'm just trying something new. See you later. That fucking asshole. Fucking asshole. I swear to God. If he fucking flips his orbit out this far again, he's losing a ring.
I think
you didn't hear it from me. You didn't hear it from me.
You pull that kind of shit, you're gonna, you know, with all the synchronicity, he probably just caused like a whole famine down there. I don't think that was cool. I feel like I have the freedom to pretty much do whatever I want. That it's not gonna make somebody become a serial killer with one of the hairless monkeys. But yeah, that guy too much. Too
I don't
much
know,
power.
Man. I don't know. I really feel like we're all just powerless. You know. And, like, nobody really cares if we're here or if we're not. That all just doesn't matter, man.
I feel like when I look out on the big sky and I see the rest of that sailing Milky Way, I got to feel like, you know, there's something controlling. We little giant planets here, planetels, rocks.
Little giant planets. Listen, Pluto, man, you're so insightful. You're a real good guy, and I don't want you ever to think less of yourself. I want you to feel like a full planet, not just a planetel.
All right, Well, I'm working on that. I'm eating a lot of cheese. I'm really trying to bulk up. Really, hitting the gym a lot.
Yeah. I'll see if I can flip you some ice chips.
Yeah, that'd be nice. Later that evening, there was an explosion in the sky. As the planet formerly known as Pluto exploded from cheese. All right,
I love that, like, my character was just, like, really, really worried about you and wanted to make sure you're okay. And your Neptune was really worried about you. And Pluto was like, yeah, man, I'm good. Like, why are you being weird? Like, everything's fine. That was really fun. And thank you for that setup and, like, setting me up to apply some of the things that I was reading.
Was I when you named me Pluto in the first place, was it supposed to be a planet or was it just?
It was supposed to be the planet, and okay. I was endeavoring to give you enough inventory to know that you were Pluto without me like saying it directly. So I was taking a risk there. In hindsight, I could have been more direct, but I like how we approached it, and then I got the fun emotional payoff of like, oh yeah, good, you know the news already. That's great.
So that was even okay. So that was the thing you had in mind already.
So my intention was, I am the planet that has to break to you that you are no longer a planet.
Well, all right, we are on the same page. I think it's some kind of synchronicity, perhaps determined.
It's group mind
by the stars.
It's group mind by the stars. It's definitely Venus.
That was my initial thought of calling you Venus, but they're too far away. I couldn't understand how that.
I love it. I think that was really fun. I think this was a really interesting pitch. And listeners, I hope that you enjoyed it too and have some time to reflect on the stories that you tell yourself and see if that's a story you want to keep telling or put the book back on the shelf.
All right. Thanks, Mary. Thanks, everybody.
Thanks, Mark. Have a good day, everybody.
So long.
You did it.
Thanks for listening to the show. Anyone listening to this episode through patreon.com/philosophyimprov is getting this completely ad-free at absolutely no cost. It is super easy to set up your custom feed on Patreon. You can still listen to this on Apple Podcasts or whatever app you want, including Spotify. And if you decide to give us a little money, then you'll get all the episodes ad-free and you'll get after talks after most episodes, not this one. So again, that's patreon.com/philosophyimprov. Make sure to look us up on YouTube to see video versions. Those are on the Partially Examined Life YouTube channel, where you'll see information about all my podcasts, or get the full story at partiallyexaminedlife.com. Bankrupt. 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 Bankrupt.